Hey, what's going on, podcast listeners? Thanks so much for coming by. Just a reminder that A Medic's Mind, the book, is available now wherever books are sold. If your particular bookstore doesn't have it, they can get it. I promise you. It's available on Amazon Canada, Amazon US, Amazon UK, and globally. You can get it at Chapters Indigo. Wherever books are sold, you can get A Medic's Mind. As always, I sincerely appreciate the support, and I can't wait to inform you guys that yes, A Medic's Mind is becoming an audiobook and will be released soon. More details to follow. But until then, thank you for the support. Everybody, and welcome to A Medic's Mind, the podcast. Thank you very much for being here. Sincerely appreciate it, as always. Hope you guys are all doing well. I'm doing okay, you know, doing some things, some stuff and things. Currently, right now, in this very moment, I'm having a tea out of a brand new mug that my good friend Sheena got for me. She is my friend from back in BC who came to visit me for Christmas and my birthday, beautiful young woman from BC. She got me a Baywatch mug. Now, there is a story behind that, and it's I told her that when I was a young man of pubescent years who was just starting to discover just how... Yeah, we're going to leave it at that part. Anyway... I don't know why I say some of the shit I do in this fucking podcast. Anyway, she got me a Baywatch. I didn't even know these things existed, but she got me a Baywatch mug. It's now my new favorite mug, or actually one of my new... I have a great collection. I've had some friends of mine send me some really cool mugs, like Superman mugs. I had a great friend of mine. Her name is Shannon. She sent me a mug that said, I never really thought I'd be a badass writer, but hey, here I am. It's a really cool mug. So I enjoy it. I enjoy my mug collection. But currently, I'm using the Baywatch mug because why wouldn't you, drink tea out of a Baywatch mug? So that's what I'm doing currently in this moment. Today, on this episode, I actually had the privilege to be on another podcaster's podcast. They go by the name of Pragmatic Paramedics out of the United States. They are Aaron and Jason. And, of course, the Stig as well. And they are a couple of highly motivated, highly, highly intelligent paramedics from the United States. They both have military service and they both continue to serve their communities in a very high capacity of pre-hospital care. And they have a great podcast. I suggest you go and check it out if you're interested in the paramedic field and the pre-hospital field. They have some great guests on there. They have clinical psychologists and physicians and people that have a wealth of experience, veterans, combat veterans. Jason himself is a combat veteran. And I believe he's 82nd Airborne. So that's not an easy title to earn. And he has done what needed to be done in order to earn that. So great guys to talk to. And honestly, there are some times when you can be in a situation where it feels like an interview, and then there's times where you can be in a situation where it feels like you're sitting down around the poker table. Of course, myself having a San Pellegrino instead of whiskey. Those days are done. But sitting around the poker table, having a conversation with a couple of buddies. And that's what this felt like. It felt like a very easy, natural conversation that we just simply recorded. And it was really cool. They asked some really, really important questions, and we shared some laughs. And then there were some moments of, that weren't quite as deep in the hilarity pool. But such as my life has been, there are moments that are funny and there are moments that are not. And I think everyone can relate to that methodology of living in life. You know, that's what life is. It's funny and it's not funny. But being able to find the humor sometimes is great. And it was nice to be able to tell some funny stories as well as some unfunny stories. And these guys were great. Aaron is somebody I've been chatting with a little bit over the past several months now. And I consider him a friend. We've never met, but I do consider him a friend. He reached out to me shortly after my sister passed away. And he was very kind and very empathic and very sincere. And, that was huge for me. I sincerely appreciated that. So, great guys. I had a lot of fun doing this, and, I'm going to be playing that for you, the interview, on this episode of A Medic's Mind. But before I do, just a reminder that A Medic's Mind, the book, is available now wherever books are sold. It's on Amazon US, UK, and of course, Amazon Canada. So if you haven't got a copy yet, please head over to amazon.ca, pick yourself up a copy. And if you feel so inclined, I'd love it if you left a review. And if you have read the book and you haven't left a review yet, well, please feel free to write down exactly what you're feeling. Good, bad, ugly, whatever. I just want to hear from you. I want to hear what people feel about the book. So please feel free to do that. And feel free to share my stuff to promote it and get it out there to people that you think might want to hear it, and might, I hate to say the terms benefit from it, because this is just, to me, this is a very selfish endeavor, because I do this stuff to make me feel better, and to feel connected to the world, of where I once came from. So, just a reminder, it is available, it's out there. And yes, of course, the audiobook still being worked on. It is a continuous work in progress, but that withstanding, this episode of A Medic's Mind is with the Pragmatic Paramedics, and it is coming up next.
Good morning, y'all. This is Jason coming at you with an episode of the Pragmatic Paramedics. Excited to have this guest, a little different than what we've had been a couple past couple weeks. Excited to talk with him and learn more about him and his story. He's our second international guest that we have. He's not from Australia. He's from another pretty awesome country, though, and looking forward to talking with him and just hearing his story and getting to know him a little bit better and introducing to you guys down here in the States. I think you'll enjoy listening to what he has to say and information he has. Both Aaron and I have read his book. It's an easy read with lots of great stories and an interesting perspective. So, Aaron, how are you doing this morning? I know you worked last night, so.
Well, then you know the answer. I'm tired. But I'm well. Yeah, tired, but well. So, but I'm happy to be here, especially considering the quality guests that we have today. Somebody that I've been communicating with for a couple of months now, at least from the very early start of the podcast.
I think from the beginning.
Yeah, it was very close.
You've talked about him. Yeah, you've talked about him since we've been doing this. So.
Yeah. So the guest name is Matthew Hennigan. Is that correct? Did I say it correctly, Matt?
Yeah, you killed it.
Killed it. Woo! But we call him Matt, I think. Is that okay if we call you Matt?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been called worse.
So have I. Much worse. But Matt is an author, but also a paramedic. So he has a very fascinating story in his book. A Medic's Mind is unbelievably fascinating. It is a story about his time in the military, his time as a paramedic, and then his time post-paramedic, which we'll get into, I think, during the show. So without further ado, Matt, how are you?
I'm really good. Thanks for the invite to come on here. It's a cool experience for me, and thank you for your kind words about the book. I appreciate it.
Yeah, sometimes you're like, oh, I'm going to read this book, and you don't really know what to expect, and you open it up and you start reading it and you're like, yeah, this is not what I expected, but you kind of read through it. This book you can read very easily, especially if you're a vet or a medic. But I think it's actually a book that anyone can read, because it's just really, really, really like well done. You articulate very well. There's a way that you do use your words and that I wish I could. And it just like puts you in the story. You feel like you're right there. Like how you like give the sense of smell and touch and all of these little tiny things that most people don't do when they're telling a story. So for all of you out there who read, which I know there are some that don't, A Medic's Mind by Matthew Hennigan is the book, and I would highly suggest it. So please take a read, and maybe at some point during the release period of this book, we'll do a giveaway, like one book giveaway.
Yeah, let's do a giveaway for the book. So
just so somebody can get it and read it and give Matt a good review, as long as you like his book.
Yeah, exactly. let's hope they like it.
Yeah, if you don't like it, don't give them a review. It's only fair. So, Matt, you were in the military.
Mm-hmm. I was, yeah.
And you were a medic in the military, right?
Yeah, for 6 years.
Okay. And then you got out of the military. And how long before you became a paramedic, a civilian paramedic?
So I got out of the military in July of 2008. And I got hired on with a really small paramedic service in rural Alberta, which is like above Montana, probably by August of that same year. So like about a month and a half, I was out and I got hired on with the service. And then I worked for that small service from August until about November when I got hired on with the city service in Edmonton. And then I worked from 2008 until 2014 in Edmonton, and then I moved out east here to Toronto, and then worked in the greater Toronto area from 2014 to 2017.
Go Oilers.
Something like that.
I don't know what that means.
I appreciate the hockey reference. It's nice. It's good.
It was a hockey reference.
Yeah.
We don't do hockey in North Carolina.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, you definitely do.
You do. It's called the Hurricanes.
We have a team, but I don't think it's for the people who are from North Carolina.
No,
our lakes usually do not freeze long enough for us to ice skate.
Okay. Anyhow, so Matt, I have two questions before I start opening up this book, literally and figuratively. When to become a paramedic in Canada, are there any prereqs? Did you have to go to school, or did your training in the military carry over and not allow for you to become a civilian medic?
Yeah. So in Canada, just because we're a very small kind of populace in respect to like other countries like the UK and America, of course. So when they do military training for technical trades, such as being a paramedic, they actually send you to civilian paramedic school. And you do the civilian paramedic component and you get qualified, you know, the same as you would if you decided to go there out of college, right? You become civilian qualified and then you do the military component on top of that. So, it's like give or take two and a half years, almost 3 years of training, when you sign up to become a medic. And then yeah, you're fully civilian qualified. And we kind of do things differently out here. Like in Canada, every province has their own standards. So you have to, sometimes you have to write a test, like an equivalency test in order to work in that province. So that got me prepared to leave the military and then go into the civilian sector.
Okay. Very cool. So you've worked both rural and urban.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you kind of have a mix like Jason and I do.
All yeah.
Right,
yeah.
The book, I know why you wrote it because I've read it and I've talked to you about it. Can you tell us a little bit about why you decided to write this book?
Sure. Yeah. So for me, writing all kind of happened rather serendipitously. You know, I kind of alluded to moving out to Toronto in 2014. That was at the kind of nearing the climax of sort of my troubled times, you know. I was drinking pretty heavily, having lots of intrusive symptoms, you know, flashbacks, nightmares, and I was using alcohol to kind of combat those things. Kind of living in a heavy state of denial that anything was really wrong. And, I just wasn't performing well at work, sick all the time. I burned through all my sick hours. I got to the point where I had to bring sick notes in, to validate that I wasn't feeling well, whatever the case may be. And then, in 2015, I ended up getting a DUI, which in Canada is a criminal offense. And I went in and just pled guilty because to me, morally, that just felt like the right thing. As paramedics, we respond to a lot of calls that involve that stuff. We've seen the ramifications of doing that. And so I felt like there really was no way I could walk into a court with a lawyer and try to justify or try to explain what was going on. So I just took my lumps, and my lumps came in the form of a permanent criminal record. And a 2-year driving suspension and subsequently loss of job, just because you can't work as a paramedic without a license. And so I started kind of just writing some stuff down in like a social media setting, on my Facebook. I'd write a huge post, I had a nightmare or something, and I'd write it down, and people would reach out, like my friends would reach out to me just to obviously make sure I was okay, but also to suggest, hey, maybe you should start a blog. Mm-hmm. So I started with researching how to start a blog. I started writing the blog, and then I had a publisher from Canada, an independent publisher, reach out to me and say, hey, I read your stuff. I think you might have a story to tell. I'd like to work with you. To which I responded with, you're not a publisher. And then I Googled her, and it turns out she's a publisher.
Right.
So I had to email her back, like, ha, kidding. That's just my humor.
Sorry.
So yeah, it all kind of happened rather. I never really started writing with the purpose of contemplating like an actual book. For me, it was just a way to kind of bleed some of the poison out, because I was kind of adrift, rudderless. I wasn't working as a medic anymore. I wasn't in uniform anymore, and uniform and purpose was something I'd known since I was 18. Graduating from high school and then leaving home, so I was a mess. And writing in a way, writing really, really helped. It sounds kind of, hyperbolic to say it kind of saved my life, but in a way, I think it kind of did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like a good outlet for people. But you write so well. I mean, it's like...
Thank you.
Yeah, it's beautiful, and I don't use that word very often, except to... talk about Jason's head.
It's symmetrical.
How long did it take you to write your book? It is beautiful, by the way.
It is. Yeah, it's very nice.
Bald is beautiful.
Bald is beautiful. Especially when you can't grow hair. Luckily, right. I have a
good barber.
A good shaped head, It doesn't have lumps sticking out of it.
Yeah. That emoji, does look well. The apple emoji is perfect for you.
I know. I love it.
Anyhow, sorry, I didn't mean to.
It's okay.
So yeah, he was asking how long it took you, like, I guess, to write the book.
Was it quick? Was it did it take you a long time, or did it just once you start writing, did it just start flowing out?
So for writing, once I started writing, it just kind of fell out. The early part of my writing is pretty dark and pretty bleak, hopeless and angry. A lot of it was very vitriolic. It was pretty angry.
Mm-hmm.
And the book itself sort of started taking shape after I began working with Heather to write a short story for an anthology that she was putting together about stories of resiliency and mental health and love and different avenues, encompassing mental health. And so I wrote this story, and I had to rewrite the ending a couple times just because the ending was kind of bleak and didn't really fit the motif of the book. And so I almost had to kind of fake my way through writing something a little more hopeful, which ended up becoming foreshadowing down the road. But I would say the book itself, from sort of conceptualizing the idea of a book to a book being finished, give or take 2 years. But right, because we took a lot of stuff from my old blogs and my recent blogs. So, in between 2.5 to 3 years.
Well, So some dedication there and
yeah,
a lot of writing. We've talked to other people who have authored books, and one of the things they consistently say is it is definitely a process.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, if you'd asked me, you know, 5-10 years ago, if I ever thought I'd write a book, I'd probably laugh you out of the building. There's just no way I would have contemplated such a thing. I wasn't a very studious guy in high school or anything. Never really wrote in high school or anything like that. So it really wasn't on my radar. But in the process of actually when I sat down and started doing stuff with my publisher, it's a lot more labor intensive than I ever would have thought it to be. It's it really kind of takes a lot out of you. And there's days that, you know, even though you're just working with, you know, Lexicon, you feel like you've put in a good 8-hour day of mm-hmm. some manually intensive labor, and it can really drain you out. So yeah, it's, I think saying it's a process is definitely a good descriptor for it.
I forgot to mention at the beginning that you are the voice of our intro.
Yeah.
So I don't know if anybody knows that, but Matt, so you heard him already. He talked before Jason talked, or well, maybe we'll see how that goes. But yeah. Well, I mean, typically we do like a, one of those little feeder lead-in things. Yeah. And then the intro, but yeah. So Matt was kind enough to do our intro, and we appreciate that. But the reason I kind of, wanted to go that way was based on just his writing, and listening to his podcast. So he does have a podcast as well. And is it A Medic's Mind too?
It is. Yeah.
The name of it. So the book, and
he does have a good radio voice.
Oh man. Dude, he, like, his editing skills and his voice is like, I'm like, we lose again.
Yeah, his voice is perfect for radio and for podcasting.
I got a good face for radio too.
I don't know why people say that. You're great, dude. No, we're it's a pleasure to listen to your podcast and book. So this book is actually broken into three parts.
Mm-hmm.
So realistically, you could read it in any order. However, it's kind of smart to start at the beginning and work your way through, because it gives you an idea of where you came from.
Mm-hmm.
So as a medic, you saw a lot of stuff, I imagine, kind of like we all have, and specifically where you work and what you do and the kind of people you run into.
Mm-hmm.
I guess before we get into some of the more deeper stuff, if you have any stories maybe that you'd be willing to tell from the book that are kind of lighthearted?
Yeah, I mean, so it's funny that you bring that up too, because when I first kind of handed in parts of the manuscript to my publisher, she messaged me one day and she was, hey, do you have any like good stories, like lighthearted stories, funny stories? And I was like, no, my life sucks. I got nothing. This is stupid.
Yeah.
She's like, well, you got to have something. And some of the stories that I found subjectively funny were not translatable to the civilian sector.
Right.
Us medics and veterans and stuff generally have our unique sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to really kind of rack my brain and think about stuff. And I was over the phone with her and I started telling her this story about when I was working as a rural medic, and I was working with a partner, and he kind of got on the radio and said something he shouldn't have involving dildos. And and so she's like, yeah, that's we got to put that in the book. That's perfect. So, yeah, I guess the way that kind of started was I was working with this guy. I don't know if he wants his name used in actuality, so we'll just, you know,
call him something else.
Yeah, I can't remember what I named him in the book there.
But call him Bob.
I can look real quick.
Yeah, sure.
Let me see. You call him.
And while Aaron's looking that up, this story is like one of probably every paramedic's, one of their worst fears.
Yeah.
To do. It's something that you always do. You're always checking.
All the time.
What he's like, oh, man, is it on? You know, you hear the radio squelch, and you're like, oh, man, is that me?
Yeah, the worst is,
did like, I just say that?
Yeah, you get dispatch over the radio, like, yeah, you're keying your mic, and it's like, oh, shit.
Oops. Yeah. Are the mic keys when you hear yourself hot miking and you're like, oh boy.
Yeah. You like
did I just say boy, what did who they are hear? They talking about?
Yeah. You drop an angry fart through
exactly
the mic.
Exactly it.
Yeah.
I just said something about somebody. I don't know who it was. Witter?
Witter, yeah, Witter.
Witter. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was working with this guy, Witter. He's a advanced care paramedic, and he was kind of showing me the ropes because I was fairly new into the civilian sector of things. And but he also had a great sense of humor. Like, he was hilarious. He would always prank you at the stations and stuff. So one day I decided to get him back, and I saran wrapped his entire bed. And and then I went to bed, and then he was talking to his wife outside, and then he came in, but he's really polite. So he keeps the lights off, and he goes to crawl on the bed, and he can't get in there. It's all saran wrapped. And he starts laughing, and I was like, ah, I got you good, you fucker. And he turns the light on, and now he's naked somehow. He took all his clothes off.
So you screwed up.
So now he's making his bed naked. I was like, no. So that's the kind of guy Witter is.
Yeah. That and would be a horrible thing.
It was awful. It was really bad because, like, he didn't care about sit-ups, you know? Like, he was not. And so, we're working together one night, and it's, you know, give it a relatively slow evening. And, you know, there was a couple of nurses that you get to know at the hospital fairly well. And, one of them was having like a bridesmaid kind of party thing. And she informed us about it, and, we're sitting there, and Witter kind of says, hey, you want to go grab coffee? I was like, sure. And he starts talking about going by the party and kind of shining our big giant light in the house through the window, and then getting over the PA system because we had a PA mic as well. And he was like gonna say things like he was the cops, like, come out with your hands up, blah 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 blah. And then as we're driving back from one of the, you know, we did like a transfer, we're driving back, and he goes, oh, and I was like, what? And he gets this fucking wash of zeal across his face, like devilish look, and he goes, I have an idea. I was like, all right. So he drives up to this house, and he goes to yell out the window. He goes to yell through the mic that, ladies of the house, put your dildos down and come out with your hands up. And so I was like, oh, you're an idiot. And he grabs the mic to do it. And I go to tell him, I was like, hey, dude, that's the mic to dispatch. And he doesn't hear me. And he's still smiling, and he keys the mic, and he goes, ladies inside the house, I want you to put your hands up and the dildos down and come out now. And nobody reacts. And I am dumbfounded. I'm still new at this point. I don't know what the hell. I'm like, oh, dude. And he does it again. Pulls it. Boy. Does it again. And all of a sudden, dispatch comes through the mic. And they're like, medic one, do you need dispatch for something? And he looks at the mic. And then he looks at me. And he looks at the mic. And he goes, oh, that's what you mean by dispatch.
So I guess nothing happened to him. He didn't get in any trouble.
No. Luckily, we had a pretty forgiving supervisor who's just kind of like, Witter, what the fuck, man?
Why? Please don't do that again.
You get in a little trouble because the FCC regulates all radio communications, not just like over listen to your car, but they also like VHF, UHF. So if they get word that you are saying like cussing and stuff like that, your agency can actually get in trouble.
Oh, well, and it's recorded here too.
And it's recorded.
Dispatch is always recorded.
And so they can always go back and find out who it was. And, you know, like our system now has like, even the walkies have individual numbers. Like if you're on crew two, it's like crew two A and B.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like they can exactly find out who did it. So
that's why you switched your radio.
About, the Canadian phone.
The what?
Yeah.
You broke up.
The Canadian model of EMS, you know, yeah.
We'll try to wait a second. Yeah. Lagging.
Can you hear me better now?
You're still like on a weird like pause lag thing. We're just waiting for North Carolina to catch up.
Yeah.
I think you're back.
The funny thing is I can hear you guys just fine.
Well, we have seconds. So we need to know it.
Yeah. So you guys, so Matt, you talked about, you had an advanced care paramedic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you talk about just give the listeners some perspective about the differences between do you guys have like EMT basics and EMT intermediates and
paramedics? Yeah.
How's that set up?
So the way our system works is to be an entry level paramedic, you go to school for 2 years and you come out of school as a primary care paramedic. And primary care paramedics are, I guess, like your EMTA, I guess, or EMTI, or whatever you would call it. Like, we can give IVs, we can give like certain medications, sometimes some pain medications, like non-narcotic pain medications, Gravol, stuff like that. And then the advanced care paramedic is an additional year of school. And that's when you come out with some more cardiac related medications and some more cardiac knowledge. And then here in Ontario, we have a thing called critical care paramedic, and they're generally kind of the flight guys. And they have a really huge scope of practice. I can actually send you guys the basic rundown of what PCPs, ACPs, and CCPs can do. But it's out here in Ontario, it's pretty, they have a pretty good scope of practice, like straight from PCP up to CCP.
And you were a
PCP.
PCP. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Thank you for breaking that down, because I don't think a lot of people know, at least here in the States, know what the different levels of practice are there. So that helps kind of give insight to how it works. So we have EMT, and then depending on what state you live in, you either have an advanced practice and then like a EMTA, whatever they call them. What is it? EMT advanced, Jason?
Yeah, it's advanced or intermediate.
And then intermediate, and then paramedic. And then there are additional certifications that you can get on top of your paramedic. So once you're a paramedic pretty much. Mm-hmm. And then it's state driven, or it's municipality driven, and then on what you can do. But the National Registry says that you are trained to do these certain things. And then on top of that, you can get your flight medic or your critical care medic. And they're kind of the same.
But a lot of states don't even recognize critical care. Like North Carolina has no recognition of or standards for a critical care paramedic. So like
a medic is a medic is a medic.
Yeah. So like one agency can say this is what a critical care paramedic is, and another one can say it's totally different. They don't even regulate it. So they don't even care.
So there's a standard where you live. Is that correct? Is that where we're at?
Yeah. So we have like, it's called the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care. And they sort of are the overseers of registering you as a paramedic. And then when you get hired on with a service, you have a base hospital. So every year you have to go and recertify with some scenarios, some written exams. Oh. And then it's kind of like your maintenance of clinical skills upkeep. Throughout the year, you do like an online web portal of things. So they're constantly kind of monitoring and evolving as well, which I think is why and how the scope of practice can evolve so quickly.
That sounds awesome. Sounds like a really good model.
I mean, Ontario especially has a good model and really well trained medics. And Alberta as well. Alberta has pretty cool. They have a stroke ambulance out there. And so they have we had a thing called VHR, vital heart response. So we could actually check people's BNP and troponin levels on the ambulance. Mm-hmm. We had a little machine. So I mean, they kind of, depending on where you work, different universities and different hospitals have different things that you can do, but it is kind of cool. I think because, again, we have a smaller populace, we kind of have to improvise, and I think that lends itself to being able to kind of have these cool opportunities as well. So yeah,
is it a national standard, or is it does it you have like does the Canadian government say I have this is what the standard is, or is it by province?
It's by province. Everything's broken down by province. It would be great to have some sort of national standard, I think. I think that would really help the paramedic profession in general. The biggest difference out in Canada from the US is that we're not explicitly linked with fire. So fire is generally its own entity and has its own modus operandi. They, of course, they show up to medical calls and assist, but they're generally not fire EMS. There's very few services that are fire EMS. Winnipeg probably being the biggest that is fire EMS, but they also have their own paramedic service too that's separate from them. So it's pretty contentious out here.
Yeah, in North Carolina, we don't have hardly any fire medics. So like it's just set up like you were just talking about, but I know in other states it's explicitly fire medic. So
yeah,
pretty interesting concept. Yeah,
yeah, we've had actually we had a guest on the Adams, Chris Adams, mm-hmm. who's a fire medic. They wrote the book. I'm blanking. What's the name of it?
Life and Death Matters.
Life and Death Matters. Yeah.
For the EMS professional.
Sorry, Chris. Yeah, so they wrote that book. Well, thanks for breaking down the differences between that. I think it helps in the story, of course. You mentioned earlier in the podcast that the DUI kind of pushed you out of EMS, and that's unfortunate, but it is what it is, right?
It ended up sort of being a blessing in disguise, just in the fact that it was sort of the catalyst for me to kind of go, all right, I think maybe I need some help. Mm-hmm. And I started down that avenue. I enacted my employee benefits and subsequently met the psychologist that I'm currently seeing now, and have a much better quality of life now. And I do thank that in large part to her and her abilities and her professionalism. So something that is 100% regrettable and I wish I'd never did it ended up being something that push me in a much better direction than where I was going.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, sometimes you just don't have anything to respond to, but I'm glad that it changed your life for the better, if that helps.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
I'm not happy that it happened to you, but of course I think that at the end we wouldn't have this book and we probably wouldn't be communicating on social media and talking and friends. So in a way, it's a good thing for us and a good thing for you. You have a book now, and that's awesome. You have a great podcast, and then of course your blog, which I admire greatly. I look at it and I'm like, I wish I could write like that. And then I just stare at it for hours longingly. Can you tell us a little bit more about PTSD? And you, and I mean, you don't have to tell us like what caused your PTSD so much as how you're managing it and what made you recognize that it was PTSD and what you're doing now to work with it or work on it.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, I kind of briefly touched before about the denial component. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of just assumed that nightmares was sort of a normal part of things. Cause I mean, a lot of people I worked with, kind of had their own demons and their own issues. And so it kind of became accepted that that's just part of what we do. And a lot, you know, introspective, dissection is always a tough thing to do. And so I was living in denial for quite a while. I never contemplated post-traumatic stress disorder. It was never something that I thought, hey, yeah, I kind of just assumed this is a byproduct of what's going on. And it wasn't until after my DUI and I was sitting in my therapist's office and having a conversation with her that she, you know, came out and just said, well, it's obvious to me that you have post-traumatic stress disorder. And I was taken aback a little bit and I was like, no, like, you know, I didn't deploy overseas. You know, I don't have that. That there's no way that's a thing. And it wasn't until I really kind of started working with the therapist and looking at the stuff that I was suffering with. So the refusing to leave my house, to hide at home, to shut the blinds and not deal with people because I was afraid of smells, sounds, tastes, and things like that. The isolation and stuff. And it wasn't until I really started looking at my behavior that I started going, oh, all right, like maybe there's some mm-hmm. truth to what she's saying here. Maybe this very smart woman is smarter than I am. And she's telling me the truth.
So it's sort of hard to admit to yourself though. You know, it's, you're an alpha type personality. You're in the military. You know, you've accomplished a lot of things. You're a civilian paramedic. You're working and it's sort of like, just have to take some self-reflection and introspection. You know, that can be tough for alphas to do because you got to say, I have a weakness in my alpha personality. So,
yeah, I mean, the to finally admit it to self definitely didn't happen soon. I kept kind of living in denial. I just kept saying, you know, I'm stressed, so of course I'm drinking. I'm stressed, mm-hmm. so of course I'm having nightmares. I'm stressed, so of course, and it was just a continuous list of excuses as opposed to truly looking at underlying causes of said stress. And it is tough, right? I mean, as a type A kind of personality, as well as, you know, reasonably young guy. I mean, I was 33, 34 kind of when the diagnosis happened. And so you're young, you've worked in an industry where you've seen what, you know, contributing members of society look like and what, you know, struggling members of society look like. And you don't want to equate yourself with feeling like you're not at the top of your game, like you're not at your best. It's a really tough thing to look down and look inward and go, okay, all right, there's some stuff. It's really hard. Yeah.
So I think I know the answer to this, but I kind of want to ask the question. So you found out that you had PTSD. Were you continuing to drink at that time?
Oh, yes. Yeah. The session right after she had told me I had PTSD, I went and got absolutely annihilated. Because I was like, oh, well, I guess I'm just a big POS. You know, I just, it's true. I am weak. I am worthless. I can't hack it. Can't handle the job. All these like self-defeatist things that are not at all true objectively. You know, so yeah, after the session, I went to the bar and I just got absolutely destroyed.
And then you decided to, I don't even know the right word for this, but sober up, so rehabilitate and stop drinking, or at least try to stop drinking.
Yeah. So, I mean, that kind of happened because my therapist knew that I was drinking pretty heavily anyway, because if nothing else, I try to be transparent and honest with what's going on, whether it sounds good or not is sort of irrelevant. Mm-hmm. So she had kind of started speaking to me about drinking and the potential of it being an issue. And she's very good at how she approaches things. So I, however, was not in a good listening place and kind of just reduced myself to saying, well, this is who I am. I'm a POS. Of course, I'm going to, you know, this is just how I'm going to go out. This is how things are going to be. And then eventually it got to the point where I was able to stop drinking for 30 days and I walked into her office and I was like, see, I can stop. I'm fine. I don't have a problem. Then I went back and started drinking because I'm like, I can stop for, you know, X period of days. And then unfortunately, in 2017, my mom passed away by way of suicide. And I dove headfirst through the neck of a bottle and drank every curvaceous inch of that bottle repeatedly. And it got to the point where, you know, my health was starting to take a hit. You know, I was gaining lots of weight. My kidneys weren't doing great. My liver was taking a bit of a pounding. And Doc had again pointedly asked me, do I think I have a problem? And impulsively, I was going to say no. But then I had this kind of flash moment where I looked at all these events that had happened in my life, such as the DUI, you know, such as sitting in that jail cell, not going to the jail cell to respond to someone, but because I was that criminal, I was that individual who was arrested. And I had to say yes. And in saying yes, that was the first time I began to contemplate that maybe I don't have control over this, that it has control over me. And if that's the case, then I guess I need to concede to potentially getting some specialized help. And that's when we started talking about going into rehab, and I ended up going into a rehab program in the summer of 2018.
And are you haven't drank since?
No, completely. I'm sober 1 year and 7 months next month.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. So Matt, and we can edit this out if you want to, this part. I've obviously had conversations with you ongoing for a couple of longer than a couple of months. I know that recently you lost a family member, a dear family member to you. And I just wanted to tell you that I'm sorry for and saddened for your loss. I know that I can't imagine how that felt. Your sister, how did that affect all of this? I mean, how does that affect you now? I mean, is it something that you struggle with still, obviously, but
Yeah, so I mean, my sister passed away suddenly and unexpectedly at the beginning of January, so it's still pretty fresh and raw. But I'm fortunate in that even though I think of myself as a bit of a wretch, I seem to have really good people in my life and people that genuinely care for me. So when I spoke to a friend of mine, his name is Eric, and I had informed him that my sister was in pretty dire straits. Because I'd gotten a call from my other sister saying she was in the hospital on life support. And I knew that I mean, there's certain things you know as a medic that aren't good. And I was asking for vital signs and stuff. And I knew things were not trending in a positive direction. And so my buddy Eric came into town and, you know, he was here with me when the news broke that my sister had been taken off support and there was nothing else that could be done. And I turned to Eric and I said, you have a couple of choices. You can either come with me or you can go home, but I'm going to the bar now. And he said, okay. So I put my jacket on and I went to the bar and I sat down and the waitress came up and I ordered a scotch. And as she started to walk away, I guess he followed her and explained to her, hey, let's not do that. So she came back and she goes, hey, you know, maybe we should try something different. And I got angry and I stormed out of the bar. And I was walking away and I ended up walking into the coffee shop and I ended up getting a black coffee. I don't really like black coffee, but I got a black coffee and I sat down by the water for a while with him. And if it hadn't been for him, I probably would have drank. But his determination and his thought for me prevented me from doing that. And I know I've played that tape to the end before. I know where that goes. And it's just... it was so painful, intensely painful in that moment and almost surreal too, because it had been so soon after my mother's passing that then all of a sudden this happens and it felt like the world was just kind of punishing me. But being able to stay sober gives you the ability to not only feel things, but also put things into perspective. And so the answer is yes, it's still very difficult. And if I find that I'm having days where a drink would be great, I just don't go to the pub. I don't go to the bar, to a place that has alcohol. I'll go sit at Starbucks and read a book instead, or else I'll work on a podcast and work on doing that sound stuff that I like to do. And, you know, I'll do things like that.
I want to say thank you for sharing that with us. I told you I wouldn't be an investigative journalist, and then I threw that at there.
So. It's all good, my friend. No, you were fine.
I remember that day vividly because I remember having a back and forth message conversation with you, and I was deeply concerned for you. I didn't know you very well, and you know, we obviously live thousands of miles apart, or at least a lot of hundreds of miles apart. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really want to overstep my boundaries, but I felt like I had to do something. And I remember waking up and just like coming in here and like continuing to text and hoping that you wouldn't drink. So I'm super happy that you were able to manage and overcome that and get beyond it. So good for you, man. That's a powerful thing to be able to say and do. So that's a challenge I don't know if I could manage.
Well, I mean, your support definitely helped. I mean, I don't want to, you know, undersell that. I mean, just having the ability to reach out and talk to you, even though, like you said, we've never met, there is sort of a shared bond in what we've done and what we do. And the same thing with Jason as well. Having the ability to kind of listen to your guys' podcast and stuff, it's there's a comfort to it, right, in knowing that as much as I may feel alone, I'm not actually alone. And so, you know, as much as I appreciate you saying what you said to me just now, I also have to throw a huge thank you to you because you did help me that day. Very much so.
Very good. Thank you. I mean, you know, like I said, I was honest and I think I still am. You can always reach out to me. And I think Jason would say the exact same thing.
Of course.
If you needed to just talk, you can always reach out to us. And that goes for anybody. I mean, I think anybody who listens to this podcast, if they want to reach out and say, hey, man, I'm struggling right now. You know, we have friends that we didn't have before that can help and know of programs that are available here in the States. We're not aware of any programs in Canada. Maybe you could just give a few if you know any, so that any listeners, because we do have a few Canadian listeners.
So for me, the like with respect to the alcohol and trauma addictions program, the place I went is called Bellwood. And that place, it like there's tons of veterans that go through there, tons of first responders that go through there, and it's not specifically for veterans or first responders, but I mean it's they know what they're doing there, because they deal with a big sect of that populace, as well as dealing just with people that generally just have, you know, every walk of life, you know, from people that live on the streets and have had, you know, a hard go from day one, through to people like lawyers and doctors and nurses and stuff that have to go through because of their own demons. So Bellwood is something that I always recommend very highly. It's where I went, and it's where I hold a lot of gratitude, because I feel like they gave me the opportunity to really engage in therapy. I feel like I wasn't as engaged before due to the fact that I was more so focused on distracting, you know, with alcohol. So Bellwood is one. Homewood is another organization that does the trauma and addictions and stuff like that. And as far as like things that you can reach out to, there's an organization called Boots on the Ground. Here in Canada, they do really good work. Wounded Warriors Canada is huge for the veteran community. There's OSI Canada, Occupational Stress Injury Canada. That's ran by a paramedic that I worked with and a mentor that helped me when I got on with the city, by the name of Mike Skinner. He kind of oversees that, and he's an incredible resource. He's I can't say enough about his intellect, but also just him as a person. Very, very, very kind individual. So those are just a few of the ones that I know and would recommend highly.
Thank you. So unless Jason, do you have some questions, Jason?
No, I'm just enjoying the conversation and listening to Matt.
Yeah.
Share a story.
It's a good story. And I think an inspiring story. We talked about your second jacket, as you label it and title it in the book, and that was as a medic. And then we kind of made our way through and discussed some of the events that led up to no longer being a medic, which you openly share. So we're not, you know, talking about anything that nobody doesn't already know. And then you told us about your PTSD and how you manage that. So now you have this third jacket kind of thing going on. So you had a first jacket, which was your career in the military. Your second jacket was your medic kind of uniform. And then your third jacket, I imagine, is both a figurative and a literal thing. And if you read the book, you actually put on a third jacket. But tell us what you're doing now and kind of how that is the thing. I mean, we know you have a book and a podcast and these things, but what's going on in your life and the things that you're doing to continue to be a contributing member of society and just do that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously I focus on therapy pretty heavily still. I still go to therapy twice a week, and we're actually going to be getting into some EMDR therapy. I have a session today in about 2 hours here where we're going to be talking about that. So it's interesting that you brought that up, you know, when we're talking prior to the show.
Yeah.
But some of the things that I'm doing is stuff like this, like coming on to podcasts such as yourself and be able to kind of converse with you guys and to share my story that way, as well as just kind of converse with people that are currently and still doing the job, doing the work that often kind of gets overlooked or conflated with other avenues of first response. So I'm a huge advocate to try and show paramedics for how uniquely special they are. And I find that we're such a new profession in the grand scheme of things that a lot of times people don't really know what paramedics do. So that's part of what I like to do on my podcast too, I like to produce them because it helps me kind of control what I'm talking about. But I like to be able to share that and kind of promote that. Public speaking is another thing that I am pretty passionate about and would like to continue doing more of. One thing that's a huge goal of mine is to be able to speak with a paramedic class, before they go on the road, before they graduate, and kind of just let them know that, first and foremost, you're human. You're allowed to feel things, even though you have this great big responsibility, and you come out with all these letters on your shoulder that read paramedic. You know, if you go to something that's sad and you're sad, that's okay. You're allowed. You know, you're a human being. Something's gonna impact you in some way, and if we start to be okay with that and start being able to digest those things in a healthy manner, I think that maybe, you know, if we continue to open that dialogue, we can mitigate some of the fallout of post-traumatic stress and where things have gone as they are now. There's a lot of work ahead, but yeah, generally speaking, it's just kind of being in the world still, just not on the front line in the ambulance. That's just not healthy for me anymore.
Sure. Well, and I think it's just as important to have people like you who represent the industry in the way that you do, so that we all have the ability to hear your story and then relate to it. Because there are things, Jason was texting me, what was it, like a couple days ago? They're like, I can relate to this. This is like everything medic we were able to relate to. And even though the stories aren't ours, they're yours. They're very, like, they've happened at some point, some way. There's this little, like, you can put yourself into those shoes, those boots, that shirt, and go, I was there. And I think it's important to have somebody like you out there doing the things that you're doing for our industry, well, for yourself as well. But
it's not necessarily just for the industry. It's for just the human piece, you know, you know, him being so open to discuss his story and he's come on and told some things that a lot of people would never even want to discuss, right, much less let their employer know. And just, you know, there's someone out there that's struggling like Matt was, you know, just a couple years ago. You know, don't give up hope. You'll either find a way to get some help. You'll continue to grow and be better. And just because, you know, one door closes doesn't mean that there's a window open for you to go through. So I think that's what Matt did. And I think that story is the book and this podcast and his current podcast just goes to, you know, give people some knows that, yeah, you know, like just like how Matt connects with other people in the industry and that's what keeps him motivated, you know, hearing Matt's story connects them with someone going through what they're going through. And even though everybody around them may not be feeling the same thing, they may be, and now they have a voice that they can connect with and maybe say, hey, look, Matt went and got some help. I can go do it too. So that's that's more important than, you know, just talking about medicine and stuff like that. So thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
So is there anything that you want to put out, like about your book or about your podcast specifically? I know we like to try to give everybody who comes on the show an opportunity to plug their own little thing here. So if you want, take a chance and throw out your
it's really tough for me to do because I feel really uncomfortable doing that because it feels like I'm like, hey, do this, buy this, it's great, you know. Obviously just the book is available on Amazon throughout, you know, the US, Canada, and the UK.
And is it audible yet?
Not yet. So I'm working
on
it.
You should definitely read it.
I'm definitely working on it.
We talked about earlier, your voice is definitely a perfect book read. So
I'm definitely working on it. I did record a couple of chapters and sent it off to my publisher so that she can take a listen, and she's approved it so far. And now I'm just trying to, there's some stuff in the book that I'm still not quite ready to read yet. You know, I wrote it and I kind of set it and forget it. And we might have somebody else read those parts, mm-hmm. Just to be able to get the book out. But it is coming out for Audible for sure. And I will be reading most of it.
I wouldn't let don't let Jason read it. It'll come out phonetically, and there'll be words in there that will be like 40 broke down words long.
Look, I was a higher rank than all y'all.
I know you were. Sorry, sir.
No, but I like the that idea though, Matt, because I've listened to some Audible books where the authors read portions and then another person comes in and reads another portion, it sort of, you know, just makes it a little more diverse and interesting. So I think that's good.
There goes your computer again.
Yeah, yeah, he's gone now, yeah.
His internet does this a lot.
Oh, does it? Okay.
Yeah. He lives in the mountains, so like basically I imagine it's what it looked like where you lived, like where you grew up.
Yeah, yeah, in BC, yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard North Carolina is absolutely just picturesque. I'd like to go check that out.
Yeah, it's beautiful here.
Yeah, he loves it.
Yeah, it's beautiful here. Just, I don't know, they want to upgrade the internet. So
that was one of the things that we didn't like when we lived in North Carolina, was the internet. But we lived in Dare County, so it was a little bit better, but not nearly. Better. Yeah, much better. We didn't live in the mountains. So I'll do it for you because I think it's important. A Medic's Mind by Matthew Hennigan, and it can be found on Amazon and other online bookstores. I don't know them all, but for sure Amazon. I think that's where we got ours. We actually put it on our webpage so that if people were to come to our webpage and mm-hmm. see it, that they could link straight to Amazon and purchase it as well.
In fact, if you're interested in buying his book, please go to our webpage and buy it through our page.
Good. Yeah, the catch is, and I'm transparent here, is that we get a small commission off of that. However, we take that commission and we give it to the Do It for Drew Foundation. So if you buy his book, you pay whatever you pay, and then Amazon so kindly gives us just a small fraction of money, and we take that money and then we give it to the Do It for Drew Foundation. So A Medic's Mind by Matthew Hennigan. And then he has the same title for his podcast, which is him talking about things that have happened in his life and that he's doing. And it's a great podcast. It's far superior to ours.
I wouldn't say that at all. It's different. It's definitely a different. Yeah.
Dude, you're awesome. And we like, Jason's great. Jason does all of our editing, and I can't imagine even how you guys do that. But like, when I'm like, Jason, can you splice this in? He's like, yeah, I can try. So he's gotten 100 times better. But like, you are like putting in like music and like rain and like all these like crazy things, and it's like, how do you do that? We should put rain in this one. Can we just have rain in the background? I think it goes with the book, you know what I mean? It's kind of,
yeah,
it goes with the book. You could have the rain playing in the background, and
yeah, but he splices in to give, you know, dramatic effect. And like you said, it's a different podcast, so yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, I don't think we need a dramatic effect.
We are the dramatic effect.
Yeah. My internet going out is a dramatic
effect. Yeah, right. Well, and you talking sometimes is a dramatic effect. But you're a great partner. Thank you. So the podcast, the blog, they're all the same title. And then you're doing you do book signings.
Yeah, yeah. Whenever my publisher reaches out to me and says, hey, you have a book signing, you know, this weekend at, you know, such a type of place, then I just show up and do it. I try to update my website, emeticsmind.com. I try to put it up there and let people know when and where I'm doing stuff. It's book signings are always a unique experience because sometimes people walk up and they're like, hey, Maddie. And I'm like, hey, I don't know who the hell you are.
Because they've read your book.
They've read it, or they listen to the podcast and stuff, or they're like, hey, you sound like you're doing your podcast. I'm like, oh, thank you. I think like,
you don't want to be too rude. You're like, well, yeah, that's because that's me on the podcast.
No, people are great. You. It's a really cool experience, actually, having people kind of come up and be so interested in what I'm doing that they feel the need to come out and like actually meet me. That's a really humbling experience, and it's been really cool. I really enjoy it.
Cool. So if you are on our Facebook and then you are on my Facebook, or you can find me, you can find Matt at A Medic's Mind and befriend him. And then if you ever have questions for him, you can always ask him, I guess, if he's cool with that. He always answers my questions, so I appreciate that. And we've talked about PTSD at least on one occasion for an extended period of time, just to kind of confirm what his opinion was on a podcast that we did, where he read a blog for us, and he confirmed what we thought. That being said, I don't really have any other questions for everybody, but Jason might, and if not, then we can do our closing stuff. And but I think I have an idea, and maybe we can talk about it real quick. I want to hear more about your experience with the EMDR.
Okay. Yeah.
Would you be willing to do that?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I'm just kind of having an initial conversation with her today. But once I get into it and see how things go, there's a little trepidous nature
let's
towards
think,
it.
Yeah. Let's think about doing that in June, Aaron, because I'm going to go do a session with the doctor that we talked to last week with Tanya Glenn. And so I actually have it scheduled for June 23rd and 24th. I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, you're going to do it too?
I'm going to do it. Yeah, I've got it scheduled, planned, got a hotel room and everything. So I'm going to fly down on the 23rd, see her at 1, and then she wants to do a follow-up appointment the next day at 9. So I'm going to fly back home that afternoon. So we could definitely talk about our experiences after. Do it that week if you wanted to.
Yeah, that'd be
cool. Yeah, I'd like to take a nap. Maybe get some real REM.
On that note, guys, we appreciate you guys listening and supporting the show. We thank Matt for coming on, and awesome stories. Just a whole breadth of even just a microcosm of his experience. We had some laughters, and we had talked about some serious things. So, great episode. Just guys, go to our website. Support Matt, follow his podcast, Medic's Mind. We'll link to it in the show notes. And Aaron, to the next episode, buddy.
Next episode.
Traces.